In a world that has more than enough information and noise, is it even possible to truly anchor ourselves and have peace in a scattered world? Hi, this is Pamela and Mary, and we are a mother-daughter team who span two generations but share one message. We will delve into what it looks like to be fully integrated, body, soul, and spirit, and will bring encouragement and hope all along the way. We get it. Life is hard. And let's be real. Hard doesn't even begin to describe it on some days. But we want you to know that you're not alone. And not only that, we are here to come alongside you and cheer you on as you walk out your individual storyline. So join us as we journey together and laugh, cry, and everything in between. Welcome to the More Than Enough Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to the More Than Enough Podcast. Hey Madre.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Beautiful here today. Lovely day here. Happy day to you.
Happy day to you. Yeah, we are super excited. I know we keep talking about our website, but we are very excited that it is finally launched and out into the world. So if you would like to check it out and also join our email list, you can do that on our website at amesgirls.com. And that's where you can join our email list. We will give resources and talk about any upcoming events. So please do that. We would love that. And also, we've seen some new podcast reviews come in, and we are so excited to see that this is encouraging some of you, and we love, love, love to hear from you guys. So if you just even want to shoot us an email, you can find our contact information on our website. We would love to hear from you guys.
Yes, we would. Yeah, I want to throw in there that, again, Mary and I, with the website, she's done an amazing job, and it's just gone out. Boy, we would love some feedback. So, man, do not hesitate. Please just talk to us out there because we are very excited to hear from you.
Yes.
Thanks again for going that extra mile.
For sure. Today on the podcast, we are going to be discussing the different responses that we have to trauma. And I think maybe a lot of us might be familiar with some of these terms. We're going to be talking about what they are. We're going to be defining those terms, and then we're going to be talking about why is it important that we can be able to call out when these things are happening in us or in the people around us.
Yeah, I would say that we think this is practical because today you could say, man, you guys are diving kind of deep in trauma and PTSD and things like that. That's maybe not applicable to most of us out here. But you know what? We feel like it's actually more applicable than maybe it used to have been. Plus, there's this deluge of information on the internet. So people are self-diagnosing themselves. People are actually seeing some things in themselves. So I think in that way, it can be positive.
Right.
And we've seen firsthand or know that many younger people are self-diagnosing. And we say that's not always the best way. So we just want to bring up these things so that you just have a grid, whether it's happening to you or someone you know, or just to have understanding of some of this language, because it's so prolific that we believe it is relevant for you to have a grid or some kind of understanding. And we're just going to give you a little micro grid today, but just enough even to make you more curious. So you do have a baseline, because this is obviously a bit of a crisis in the world today in terms of mental health. So we're just bringing one piece of that today to focus on.
So we know that the four different responses in the mental health world documented, I guess, for the responses to trauma are fight, flight, freeze, and now they've added fawn. So we're going to define those, and then we're going to go into how do we begin to see how this is affecting our life or our children's lives. And is there anything that we can do? We don't want to just give you a definitions and be like, yeah, you might be flighting or freezing right now. Sucks for you. Is there anything we can do to give ourselves grace in that moment? Is there anything we can do to extend compassion to the people around us? So Mom, if you want to start with defining those terms for us, just so we're all kind of on the same page.
Yes, be happy to. I think one of the things we want to know is that this is an acute stress response. This is what this means. Any of these four have been grouped together. And so there's enough of each one of them that we can respond, and anybody we know or ourselves, we can have any one of these four. We can have a combination of these four, and we can literally have all of these four in terms of our responses, depending on where we are in our trauma, basically our trauma journey.
But real quick, before we define those terms, what we're saying is these different four responses, are you saying that these are the responses that we have when we've been in stressful, traumatic situations, and now this is the way we respond moving forward? Or is this the way that we've always responded to trauma from birth? Like this is how we're hardwired.
Okay. No.
Yeah.
No. If things happened at birth, it's really from the moment of the event.
Okay.
Okay. So we're talking in context of that. So we can have one, two, even maybe all these responses intermittently. We're naming these words, but we're going to now give you some broader understanding for that here in just a minute. And they're all very, very simple explanations. Fight just literally means anything that you perceive that your nervous system perceives as a threat, you're going to respond by fighting. Let me just tell you that these first two, fight and flight, the original studies about this were about animals. And so I think it was in the early 1900s. So they were beginning to see that this is how brains of animals responded in their nervous system, was basically through either fighting the animal who is aggressively coming at them, they fight, or they turn and run away. If they believe that their aggressor is too much for them, they're going to run. If they are up to the challenge of the duel, they are going to fight. They saw this response happening. This is how they respond when they're threatened. But then a little bit later than that, of course, they started saying, well, people are kind of like that. And of course, from 1900, I think it was like 1901 or something, to this day, obviously, we've come a long way in looking at these responses in human brains and human people. But it started out with that, based on that, because they began to see, gosh, people do that. So fighting is literally, something is a perceived threat, and you're just going to come at the person with all you got. You're going to become hostile and aggressive. Okay, that's one response that we can have. The next one is flight. Like the other animal, that takes a bigger animal to basically make them run. In a similar way, we can do the same thing. Anything that we perceive as threatening, we just turn and walk away. We leave the situation. We get in the car and we run out the door and slam the door. We go away from it. We do everything we can to get away from the danger. And these two other ones that, of course, are a little bit newer to some people. The third one is freeze, and freeze means just like what you think it would mean. It's not that you freeze as a decision. This is the part some people maybe don't fully understand. It is that you're unable to move or act against the threat. We all use the term a deer in the headlights. It's bizarre how a deer will come across, especially around here, and you'll just stare at you instead of running away.
Right.
So there's that sort of freeze, they just stop. That idea, who's ever listening, if you've ever had even one moment of feeling this freeze kind of moment, that literally you feel like you cannot move or think, even if it's just seconds, that's something, especially if it's not an outlier, if it's something that's happened more than once, and you could identify it. Just to let you know, that very possibly could be a trauma response. And the last one is fawn. We have someone who's from staff of our agency. I'll tell you more about what we do another time, but they're kind of our boss. She's been in mental health forever and has degrees. And one day I was walking her to the door and we were talking about some responses. I was talking about a new client we had that has a lot of anxiety. But I said something to her because I was explaining to her that he was showing signs of fawning. And fawning is you kind of immediately, you're trying instantly in a situation where you feel threatened in some way, anxious, you're trying to please the person. You're just falling all over yourself to, oh, it's okay. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, no. I won't do it again. And you're just trying to make sure that there's going to be no conflict because your conflict comes, something terrible is going to happen. Because you've had an experience. So it's people pleasing on steroids in a moment.
Right.
So I made the comment to her as we were walking out. We had been talking about this new client of ours. And I said to her kind of jokingly, I said, hey, you know what? I get fawning. I have responded that way in many things in my life. And you just think it's normal. But when you're actually anxious and you're scared to death that you got to please them really fast, that's fawning. And anyway, she looks up at me and laughs and she goes, I'm so glad they've added that word. I'm that person too. And so here we are, two mental health people.
Yeah.
And we're saying, I've experienced that. She has trauma in her past as I do too. So all of that is some of these responses that we can consider, whether we see them in ourselves or others we know, or we run across it if we're just meeting with someone for coffee. I mean, honestly, right. These things are getting pretty profound. These are things that we can be aware of.
So you have identified and defined what fight, flight, freeze, and fawn are. But maybe now you could take a minute to be like, okay, what's behind that? We know we can maybe even identify with certain ones of those. Like, yeah, I do that. But maybe you can talk about a little bit, Mom, what maybe causes some of those things to happen within us. Why are some of those trauma responses happening within us? And I think we throw around the word trauma a lot, and maybe some of us think, oh gosh, I haven't had a super traumatic event, but maybe we can redefine what trauma is and what that could look like in our lives.
I think that's a good question because it's really maybe a little bit different than people think. And I think that's why we use it so casually now. But I know that for me, it was enlightening over these years is to really understand the difference, because we tend to think that the particular event, a singular event, was so terrible. And if you have this event, you're going to have trauma. But when we say trauma, there's trauma almost always at the moment.
Yeah.
Those kinds of examples would be violence, watching violence, a car accident, some sort of a cataclysmic event in your community, earthquake. These things are traumatic events in and of themselves. They're defined as traumatic events. What's important is how your personal response is to that traumatic event.
Yeah.
And it isn't really about, if I name this event, everybody has trauma from that event. They have trauma in the moment and how they respond because it's terrifying. So everything is all happening in that moment. But we think it's how severe the event was or the event itself. Actually, trauma is all about your personal experience with it and now your response to it now that it's passed. It could be passed in just minutes, depending on what it is. So all of it has to do with what happens in your experience, what happens in your nervous system and your brain and how it records that event and your response to that. That's what trauma really looks like.
Right. That's why we see family dynamics and traumatic events could be happening in a family and one brother has major PTSD and major effects from it. And the other is like, hey, that didn't affect me at all. Like, why are you dealing with this? Because it's not a blanket thing.
Exactly.
It's not a, oh, we both went through this traumatic thing. Why are you having issues? I'm not having issues. You shouldn't have issues either. So we want to be really careful of that.
Yes, because in reality, something that we can measure more in a linear way today, what happens is that when this trauma can be processed more quickly, as opposed to it actually gets stuck inside a person's mind and their body. It literally gets permanently put in there. When that happens and it's embedded, and if it goes untreated for more than 30 days, even if you're having symptoms of what trauma can be and you get stuck, there's many symptoms that could show up in that first 30 days, but if there's no bridge that gets you across that, and it kind of tends to now stick in that nervous system, literally in your body, in your mind. So what I want to say at this point is, man, it goes back to Mary's beautiful story about the little child who skinned their knee. To me, this is why your story about that several episodes ago, and I was going to ask if you could just tell it again, condensed. But what happens to that little boy who skinned his knee And it doesn't have to become a crisis to him if there is a bridge that can take him back to safety.
Right.
When we talk about trauma, we want to talk about what it is, what causes it, what can some of the responses be that get permanently embedded, and what are just the symptoms that can happen just for a time period and it passes. What changes it from trauma to any kind of PTSD? And what are the few differences of PTSDs? This is why that story you gave that can fit for so many life events definitely can fit into this discussion on trauma. Can you remind us the story about helping the little boy? We do the little simple thing, then we do that little simple thing, then we may do physical touch, but you tell that story so that we can apply that to the big picture of what we call the big T versus the little T. Big T is trauma, the capital T that evolves into something much greater. And the little T is a trauma that's momentary and that we can find a way to peace and safety.
I think the story you're referring to was just the little boy, he skins his knee, he's scared. His initial reaction, he feels scared, he's alone, he skins his knee while he's outside. He runs inside to his mom. And in that moment, it's like when that narrative of that little boy is being formulated. So it's like, how can we attune to the needs and the pain of our child in that moment? I think I described the mom taking a moment to pause in that moment to be like, hey, buddy, to acknowledge it. Like, oh, I'm so sorry you hurt yourself. Holding them, loving them, sitting on the couch with them. Again, not giving up your whole day, but acknowledging the pain of it, speaking truth, giving them a juice box, sitting with them, cuddling them. And then, of course, the hope is that the narrative in that moment of that situation was, oh, something bad happened, something painful happened, but then it was okay. And then I was comforted. You're able to be the bridge in that moment to your child or to anyone, actually, in that moment that's feeling that pain, that's able to give them that narrative. Obviously, the alternative to that would be the mom is, I'm not saying, even before I say this, you might be like, gosh, well, I do that. I do this. We're not saying that every time we don't do it perfectly, our child or the people around us are going to have.
Yes, are scarred forever. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm just giving an example. But maybe the alternative to that would be that we're busy, that we're just like, you're fine, I'm on the phone right now, you're fine. And again, they might just run off and keep playing. But they could be like, oh, I'm alone. I have to figure it out on my own. It's just me against the world. And then they wonder why later in life that they begin to build this narrative, like no one's going to help me. When in those moments, they felt something, just like we said, another kid could have skinned their knee and not had that narrative at all. But for whatever reason, their wiring or the way that they've perceived the world up until this time, they're perceiving their mom not comforting them as a feeling of they're alone and they have to deal with this on their own. And that's the belief system that they're now walking out.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to throw in two other words to just define. There's this idea of acute and chronic. Chronic for us is if you have a cough that you've had for 6 months, that's called a chronic cough. You're having it all the time. It's been ongoing and it's not going away, but it's not a horrible cough, but it's chronic. It just doesn't go away. That would be what we mean by chronic. If I say I have this acute cough, it means I'm coughing my head off. My chest is starting to hurt. It's bad. And it's happening right now in this moment. And this cough is gone quickly from 0 to 60. That's acute. Okay.
Yeah. I'm thinking as you're saying that when our kids go to the doctor, I took them to the doctor the other day and they're saying exactly what you just said. They're basically like they had some sort of cold or sinus infection. And the doctor was like, okay, I want you to come back in if something changes rapidly overnight or if this continues on for the certain period of time, basically insinuating both are equally bad in different ways. So if it keeps going on, I want you to come in. And if something changes rapidly, I want you to come in because both of those are not good signs.
Exactly. So when we're trying to understand this word again, that's thrown around like just a common word today, trauma. Dishwasher, car.
Right.
They're just these words that we just think we understand fully what that means. So I would just say that we want to add to this and understanding our responses to trauma is that there is this idea of acute and chronic. Okay. So let's take the boy with the juice box. The reason is because when we give that, I wanted you to give that example because in reality, that's not typically the trauma we think about. But here's what does happen with that little boy. Now let's take that little boy, because again, moms, if you missed the skinny yesterday, this is not the point of the story today.
Right.
The point of the story today is we're talking about something that gets much bigger. Every time you miss that up to this point, I'm sure it's not repetitive and done intentionally.
Right.
But the point is, let's take that same little boy. Let's say he happens to live in the woods. It's a big, he has a big part of land. Sometimes he gets a little confused getting back home. That time he was lost. But let's just say that somehow now the mother didn't really do those few simple steps because she's chronically depressed.
Right.
Let's say we could throw in a million other reasons. Yes. Let's say every time anything bad happens to that little boy, even in the smallest of ways, she's not there.
Right.
He has to go to her bed where her blinds are drawn, and he has to wake her up and tell her the scary thing that just happened. And she just pats him on the head and say, "Mommy's sleeping. You'll be okay. Just go back to your room." Okay, so what if these repetitive things start happening where this person, this caregiver, is not able to provide that kind of bridge? What do you think that's going to start happening over time? That's called chronic. It's happening over and over again. Maybe it develops into more, but it wouldn't even have to develop more, because if he's continually not having those safety moments and getting back to square one, what's happening? This is what can start to look like neglect. "Mommy, I'm hungry. It's 2 o'clock. Oh, mommy's just going to sleep a little longer."
Yeah.
So the kid is actually going hungry, let's say. There's so many ways that something chronic, again, drip by drip, can accumulate into something that's going to become very problematic. So we tend to think of trauma as just acute, something terrible. But let's take now, we're going to define that. Acute trauma, let's say we think of some sort of abuse. So we'll talk about violence or sexual. Let's just name those as a big thing. More often than you're going to face a natural disaster. Definitely more often than a natural disaster. Let's say that happens, but let's say that's happening something within the family, because it's always almost 80-some% that it's someone we know, if there's any of this happening with children. But it would have happened to you as a child, let's say. And let's say it's not once, but it's happening over and over again. Okay, now we have acute. This is a very traumatic event, to be violated sexually as a child. Scales way up at the top of things that can happen in terms of what it does. So we have this sexual trauma, but it's happening again and again and again and again. Now we take acute mixed with chronic. We have a new thing called complex trauma. This is a complex trauma where you have acute and complex going on at the same time. Okay, and it happens in childhood. So this is where we can get into the weeds if there's no bridge for that child, because maybe they're not sharing this thing that's happening. Maybe your teenager isn't sharing the bullying that was acute, but now it's chronic. Now they've gotten their friends, and maybe this young teenager is not sharing this with their parents. Okay, there's no bridge. There's nobody to say, "This isn't okay. We're going to stop this."
Right.
But they're suffering in silence. Statistics for teenagers having a traumatic event is recorded right now at like 43%. That's an outrageous number.
Yeah.
Even if it's their perception, right?
Right.
And about a third of those 43% go on to have PTSD. Now we've got that kind of branded. What we just kind of wanted to start with was to explain trauma, chronic, acute, complex trauma. And this is how, when we get into these places of PTSD, these responses are happening in everyday life that have nothing to do with the event.
Right.
And we as parents need to recognize the signs in our own loved ones, in our own families, and at least be aware, and then know the symptoms. So we can talk about that in a minute, but just to stop there and let's process that.
Yeah, I think that's so important that we really define or redefine what trauma looks like in all of our lives, because I think it is unfortunately much more common than we think in ourselves and our children. I think sometimes it can be very difficult as parents to acknowledge that our children are undergoing some of this trauma, or they've dealt or they are experiencing some of these fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And we want to say, "What? I haven't done anything. I've been a good parent." I think it's really important that we don't input our own shame or anxiety or fear that we mess them up.
Yes.
Into their perception of what went on, because that's not helping them at all. If anything, it is only adding to the noise and that chronic feeling that they're not being validated and they're not seen. And I promise you from experience, that is, it's not helping move them forward. So I just want to say that little preface, but I do think it's so good that you're defining the terms of that, because sometimes I think we might not even remember some of this trauma. And I think that that's something to point out, that there might be parts of our life that are kind of blurry, they're kind of hazy. We might not even remember exactly what went on, but we do know that every time I'm in this situation, I flight, I freeze, I fawn. And so I think that's really important to notice in ourselves, even in our spouses, when they're responding in these certain ways that don't really seem to make sense, and they don't even necessarily know why they're feeling that way, to show grace and compassion, because there might be something going on there that they're not even aware of, that their body is holding on to. We talk about the book, The Body Keeps Score. Your body, your muscle memory, your subconscious is remembering these things that your conscious mind doesn't even remember and recall.
Yes.
So I think knowing these fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, and being able to recognize them gives us the ability to pause in that moment or to reflect back and say, what was going on there? I'm always responding in this way. What's the narrative I'm believing here?
Yeah. And I want to add to that. We're talking about these four, but remember, these four responses to trauma mean that something's pretty advanced at this point. So we're talking about responses that if they go on for more than 30 days, so we want to be looking for early clues. I look back, I didn't know some things that had happened to my son, Joshua, who died at 17, 25 years ago. There were some strange things that I had to put together after he passed, and then I gained more information. But here are some things we want to look for if we think our kids aren't being themselves. But again, this goes to you as well, because no matter what your age is, as the adult, trauma can start. Signs of trauma, which now I'm talking about more permanent, are PTSD. Those things we were just talking about. If you start having those things, what seemingly are out of the blue, and you're having a great life right now, why in the world would I have some of these strange responses? Because over time, with every decade, some of these things that our body is holding on to in our nervous system, and this what we call our subconscious places, it can start to leak as we just become older. So if you start to see those out of the blue, we want to say to you that, or it's happening now, in either one of those, you want to take a look at that. But these are things that can just show up if it's been more recent, and we say that let's follow up and get some sort of bridge to get you over to a place of feeling safe sooner in any of these events as not. There, you can be more nervous, edgy, hard to sleep. Nightmares, again, include your kids in that, panic attacks, any kind of verbiage that would include suicidal thoughts, any kind of flashbacks, again, you or someone you love, difficulty focusing, making decisions, being confused or overwhelmed, even when it's just an everyday thing, I got to make a grocery list, feeling numb or looking as if you're numb, like that frozenness, inability, you're just not able, you don't. They seem to lose interest in what they were doing before with their friends, or again, yourself, unable to enjoy what they used to do. And then those snapping things of just this anger, this aggression, even violence can often be combined to something that's underlying that. A big one that we're all familiar with is avoiding the place or the person or the event that triggered the trauma. Let's say a concert hall, there was a shooting. Obviously, these are going to be very obvious things that you'd be looking out for, but it's the hidden things that we don't always know that are going on. And the main ones are depression and anxiety. Any of these that are changed or they get worse, these are things to look out for in yourself. Another things that can come in ways that you're not necessarily knowing. It may not be the original trauma. We've talked about this on the show. Like I can have, and this is particularly, and I'm going to say more in my last 10 to 15 years of life and marriage. Again, I'm getting older, weaker, have more health problems. I can remember when I first felt some things that I hadn't felt so much in the earlier years. And that would be like, let's say my husband and I had a bigger kind of a blowout of a fight, some kind of conflict, and it's gotten louder. There's something about it that will trigger that original trauma that's maybe been buried.
Right.
So if you begin to have different responses as you get older and your life is actually less stressful, you can have a clue that perhaps this is something that's just been buried, that it's just not sprung up because your body, you know, your that nervous system is able to keep it tamped down under the water, under the surface, but it will start leaking eventually if it's not dealt with. So these are all things to keep in mind about how we can respond.
Yeah. And as we come to a close here, we want to leave you guys. We know this is such a huge topic and we're definitely going to be coming back and doing some more episodes surrounding this, but we want to leave you with a few takeaways because we know that you may see this in your life. You may see this in your kids' lives, in your spouse's life, but is there anything that we can do today to not just address this, but to start to bridge these things even after it's been a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades since the incident or since the traumatic event?
I would say one of the things that comes to my mind, I think this could sound way too simplistic, but I have to go back to your analogy, Mary. There's a little booklet out of a string of authors who talk deeply about this subject. And it's one of the first little ones. It's just almost like a little booklet, but it's very interesting about how quickly we can get a person on a bridge to back to peace. These are groups of mental health people and people all in those kinds of fields who team together and go to major crises all throughout the world. And there's no barrier of religion. There's no barrier of creed or ethnicity, nation. When people have faced a very large scale traumatic event, many people come rushing in on teams to help come to their aid with all kinds of things. But one of them, of course, is mental health. And they have found all people, the quicker that they get on that bridge, the quicker that happens and that person stays with them, that the statistics are very much marked that they are taken across that bridge and they are able to, even some of the most dramatic traumas, to be able to get back to a place of peace. And they do not experience PTSD in the future. This is why your story, I want to get branded on our listeners' minds and my own mind and our hearts, is that while you could have missed that originally in your childhood, first of all, having this knowledge can help you go forward very much as an efficacious tool in your hands and in your heart for the life of the people that you're deeply connected to. You can use this with your spouse. You can use this with your children, even your adult children. The thing is, all those components that Mary was talking about are these little tiny interjections of compassion, validation, being present, making this person feel safe, staying with them for maybe a little longer an adult would need than this. But if it's more recent, particularly, that we can do these things to help them avoid ever getting on this deserted island called PTSD, where it becomes much more complicated to get them back into this whole big giant country where there's just a simple bridge away from that.
Right.
I would say the other thing about this is that you can actually experience this too. If you're aware that you're already in this cycle in any way, wherever you are in this journey of trauma, or PTSD, or complex PTSD, wherever you are, if this is not the time of your life where you can access mental health support, I would say the same idea of the juice box and tending to the knee and just feeling like your love and maybe having a dialogue with that maybe inner child that went through that, we can all access that information. The idea of doing some of that even for yourself is a place to start. God, I invite you in. I can remember part of this from childhood and I just keep pushing it away. But I know that when I can't even think about it because it causes so much pain or so much fear, so much anxiety, so much anger, again, we've talked about this on this show, but that you would take some of these triggers of trauma, let's say from your own life, and you can do the same thing. Imagine you being that little girl and God coming alongside and Jesus takes your hand and you were able to really experience that as a child. But now you're going to invite that whole scenario to come back in and it's like oil on your soul. And we would suggest more intervention than that, but start with what you have by at least turning and reflecting to have compassion for what you have been through or experienced, because it matters. And if it starts by you recognizing it, that's a beautiful place to start. So those are some of the things I suggest at this moment.
Yeah, I'm just feeling, Mom, if you want to just pray that over us, I feel like Yes. This is a heavy topic and I think it can bring back traumatic memories or just the shame that maybe we've ever been a part of creating any traumatic events for our children or anything. So I think if you just want to pray over us and any listeners that the Lord would just give us grace to walk this out.
Yes. Jesus, we just thank you that you are the author of compassion. You are compassion. It isn't just a part of you. You are compassion. You are kindness. You are mercy. Lord, you hold our hearts and every moment of our lives is ever before you. There's no confusion. Lord, you've been there. The part we don't even remember, those of us who know it happened, but we've erased the memories and the details. God, they're all clear. You have clarity into every one of them. So God, we just ask that for all those listening today, and including Mary and I and ourselves, God, all the things that have come to where we are today, God, we just ask you for your grace, for gifts that we can't earn ourselves, that we need you to intervene on our behalf. God, we ask for mercy, just that we could have a life that's more whole in our brokenness, God. And it will require, Lord, for us sometimes to have mercy on others who've done things to us. God, give us that kind of capacity, knowing that they were broken too. God, just give us all the right ways to think about others and our own selves through the lens of your heart as our designer and creator and father. So God, we just pray for where fear wants to come in. And as Mary said, shame abounds in all of us towards the things that even happened to us that weren't even our choices and to the things that we have even done to our children. God, we just beg you for the ability to be able to face our own shame and our own fear. God, knowing that you love us and there's nothing about us that will change your heart and your faithfulness to us as your children. So God, come forth this week, today, this moment, and wash over the person listening right now who's crying out to you, God, that they would know that you're present, that they would know, God, that you are with them. And you will be with them, and they can trust you with their deepest, darkest places that they're overcome by. And God, then we ask for healing. We just ask, God, that you would come in the most tender parts of us that no one knows fully in the way that you do, God. And you would come and just, God, just pour out your oil on our hearts and our minds and our brokenness and our foundations. And Lord, we just ask for a blessing over them that are listening today, that they would have hope, that there is hope available, that they can get well, and that you want them to be well. And they just, God, many, we just ask that they would have the courage to invite you in. We love you, Jesus. We thank you that you hear us and see us. We bless your name, God. Amen.